This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hi, I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter, the show about little things that most people overlook, the quiet ideas, small actions, and the unexpected stories that make people and communities better. Today I'm talking with Quinn Wilkes. Welcome, Quinn.
Thank you for having me.
I have to start here, and really it's a big start here because it's not the normal. You're from the US.
Yes.
Miami in particular, right?
Yes.
So when I think of Miami, I'm showing my age a bit now. I'm thinking of Michael Weston, Burn Notice. I'm thinking of margaritas down that part.
That's
I'm thinking of a lot of Cuban influence. I'm thinking of Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide, where probably in Miami, everyone thinks the worst end of the world is Miami. If that's true, why Hamilton? We're not quite the center of the world. We are the city of the future. There must be some sort of story here.
Well, it's a long story. It starts with Roblox and me meeting my future wife, who born and raised Kiwi. Me coming over last year in 2025 on a tourist visa and then deciding to stay with her.
Just when you mention Roblox, right? If you're talking to old school people, anything over kind of 40s, they probably don't think of meeting people on games. They're probably listening here thinking, what the heck is Roblox?
Yep, that's very atypical kind of pipeline. It was just a good bit of fun. Me and my friend, 2019, the summer right before our senior year of high school, we decided at 2 or 3 a.m., as you do, to hop on Roblox. And we met Ella, who would then be my future wife, and we invited her to our Discord server. And that's kind of when we got to talking. Her and I grew close. And yeah, a lot in between me getting here and there, but that's the...
That's... Who made the first move?
It was kind of a mutual thing. It was December of 2023 when we first met. And probably at the beginning of 2023 is when we started to get kind of serious, you know, seriously considering, hey, this could actually work, even though we're halfway across the world from one another. You know, if things do get very serious, then someone might have to make a sacrifice. We had those conversations very early.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Talking about, you know, leaving family and friends.
Yeah.
You know, not forever, but that's a hard thing to do.
Did it ever kind of strike that thought come to you where at one point you'd be going, well, hang on a second, this is my life now. Either the travel from the States to New Zealand backwards and forwards for holidays and everything else, and the costs involved with that,
or
actually settling in one country where one partner's going, yep, this is home, with the others going, well, not quite.
Well, that's a very interesting thing, and Ellen and I actually kind of had a similar conversation a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about me not being homesick at all being in New Zealand, you know, away from my family. And also, might I add, we can get into this a bit later, but it was not a planned thing at all that I would come here and stay. So my parents, of course, were a bit, you know, that's hard to see, yeah. But we were having the conversation of, yeah, I don't get homesick. I usually do get homesick, but now I'm not homesick. So I think the idea of home has evolved a little bit to be more so with Ella.
Oh.
So wherever we lay our heads, as long as we're together, that's kind of a cliche thing to say, but I think that's very true. And I think she thinks the same way.
Oh, well, that's really cool. Now, who made the first move in terms of meeting up? Did Ella come to you or did you come to Ella, or how did that happen?
So that's where it's mutual. I think I really can't remember who said it or who suggested it first. Yeah, she would probably have a different answer from me. But it happened and she flew over for the first time, December of 2023, as I said.
So how old was she then?
She would have been 21.
So 21, a ticket by yourself to the States.
Yes.
What was she thinking? What did her parents think?
Her mom was a bit, as she should be, a bit concerned for her well-being.
A bit.
Yeah, yeah. Her friends and all of her family, they all thought the same thing, that she would end up in a body bag somewhere. you know, being South Florida, you hear about Florida Man and whatnot and all the crazy things that Florida Man does. And my parents were also kind of thinking in an opposite way, like, oh, this is a 50-year-old man that's coming to see us. I hope Quinn that didn't send him any money. Yeah. just kind of warning against it. And I think deep down on both sides, everyone trusted us to make that decision for ourselves. And I have no doubt that she was real and vice versa, same way.
Well, I guess you'd be hoping that too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So you're standing at the airport. Did you have a sign?
No. And I did think about it.
So if you didn't and you were thinking about what would have been on your sign?
Oh, God. I'll have to get back to you on that one. I think I did think of something, and Ella also probably jokingly mentioned something else, but I think I was just so nervous that it just didn't come about, and I was kind of – I spent the week or so leading up to it kind of like, oh, my God, this is really happening.
That would have been quite a tense – kind of week in the lead up, wouldn't it?
Yes.
For the first time?
Yes. Yep.
But she was here just on holidays, is that right?
Yes. Yep.
So when did you think you'd get married? Is it on holidays or is it some other time? Or
no. So we got married the year after in December of 2024. That came up. We had always kind of talked about, you know, how we're going to live together and, you know, getting married, children, all those sorts of things that you talk about in a serious relationship. And it wasn't until September of 2024 that I was up in North Carolina, so a couple of states above Florida on the East Coast. We were up in the mountains and we were there for one of my cousin's wedding. My uncle, so my mother's brother, he was the one that officiated that wedding. And so a little bit of backstory, Ella and I were talking about doing a K-1 visa, which is the 90-day visa, which you've seen 90-day fiancé or at least know of it. That's what it is. You come to the U.S., you have 90 days to get married, you can stay. We decided because processing times were a bit longer and because Ella was already planning on coming to the States in December of 2024 with her mother there, when's the next time that all the family would be together, you know, all the close family would be together? Mm-hmm. So while we were there for that wedding, it was me, my brother and my mother there for that. Ella and I had the conversation and we said we might as well just do it in December. And I told my mother, she got very emotional because it all happened so fast. Yeah. But, you know, we all came together. My uncle agreed to officiate our wedding as well, which was awesome. And we just made it work.
So you go from that to say, I'm married now, Mom. See you later. I'm leaving the country. I'm going half around the world. I'll see you at Christmas.
Yeah. So in June of 2025, I came over with my mother and father. That was their first time being in New Zealand. I just wanted to show them around. And I was going to stay, I think, about a month and a couple weeks. So a bit longer than they were staying initially. And we decided to do the tiki tour around the North Island.
I love that. I love that tiki tour, right? You're already getting these New Zealand mannerisms.
Yeah, I'm picking up on them. Sorted and all. so we were doing our tiki tour and we were down in Wellington. And I might have been just laying in bed or, I don't know, having a drink or something like that. But I thought, you know, if I just have this internship back in the States, that's not... You know, I'm pretty close to my supervisor in that. I could talk to them, do a little bit more work, and then shut down that chapter of my life. That would be fine.
That must have been a big call, though, right? Because you studied – what was your degree again?
Economics.
Economics. So you study economics to move possibly halfway around the world and to shut that chapter of your life, like – Well, that's a big decision.
Yeah. Well, so the internship was in data quality assurance. I was working with Alzheimer's data. Economics is not really data science because I was a political track, not a STEM track.
Okay.
So I was already outside of my field and doing that. And now I'm also, you know, at Foundation. I'm even more outside of my field. So I've kind of jumped around a little bit, kind of really just trying to decide what I want to do.
Oh, there you go. Was there a moment when you nearly pulled out? You said, no, I'm going back to what I did. Or have you always been one to, no, this is what I've done. I've made my decision. I'm looking forward. That chapter's closed, as you mentioned.
In terms of moving, making the move?
Yeah, in terms of moving, in terms of giving up on your degree. Well, not giving up on it, but using it in a slightly different way that you're the traditional person who would have done that degree did.
Yeah, well, it wasn't till while I was into my degree that I realized that in order to do something directly with your economics degree, you need to kind of go in academia, so be a professor or whatnot. So I did something sort of similar. I used something called Stata, which is a statistical analysis software, and it's not too dissimilar from R, which is a programming language and environment. That's what I used in my internship. So I kind of showed that I have the skills to learn things and kind of shift that knowledge set to make it work for what it is. So I've never really done anything directly with my degree, and I probably never will, but it's more of a general thing, kind of like a business degree would be, maybe just a little bit more specialized.
Yeah, and we're not – like I must say you're not coming across slamming people who have degrees at all. But in saying that, yeah, it's quite a thing where people are shifting their degrees and it's more of a mindset.
Yeah, well, I don't think that university is for everyone, and I don't think – I think we should kind of move away from that idea, getting people trapped into kind of a long-term commitment for something that might not even be useful for what they want to do.
Okay, so now you're in New Zealand, you're at Foundation Community Participation, and now you're working, facilitating a program actually that working with people with intellectual disabilities or disabilities in general. Tell us a bit about that. What surprised you, or what was your first day like?
Well, the first day was a bit hectic because, and I think you know this too, we kind of, you know, our CE had this idea of what Foundation would be and just dropped us into the ocean, essentially, kind of gave rough ideas of what he wants and let us figure it out from there.
So what was something that surprised you in terms of was good and you said, wow, this is just fantastic?
When we get to the facilitating side of things, the thing that probably surprised me the most would be the fact that our participants pick up on what we do and, you know, when they grab a hold of a skill set, they actually have the want to teach other people. So it goes from that being supported to supporting kind of pipeline that, you know, I think before it happened, we maybe considered that that could be a thing, but the fact that our outcomes are 56%.
So what was hard in the thought?
That's a really good question. I think the hardest thing would be, and I think this goes against my nature, the letting people figure things out on their own.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, taking a step back and, you know, telling them kind of, giving them an assignment to, you know, make it more simple. And then taking a step back, hands off, even though the result might be a bit more messy or it might take a bit longer or they might get a bit frustrated. Taking that step back to really stretch their potential, their capability, that's hard to do.
That must be hard in the first place, you know. And I guess that's the same for all of us. We all want to do a good job and we all want to, especially new, like we were just talking about. But then to have that success, I guess, lay in the hands of someone else.
Oh, absolutely.
But realizing that, well, it's about their success in the first place, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's you're right. That's a hard mindset to kind of shift into, especially being brand new to, well, basically brand new to the disability sector. That kind of shift to, hey, it's not about me or, you know, what I'm doing behind the scenes. It's about the visible outcomes, the results that we see. And going back to it, I think that's a very human nature, that wanting to see people succeed and wanting to help them do the best that they can.
Well, that's really where joy comes from, isn't it?
Right.
I do remember listening to Simon Sinek a long time ago, finding your why, and generally that joy or that satisfaction comes from giving first and then getting second, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So the show's all about the small things that people miss. What are some of the small things that actually make a big difference that you come across on a daily basis?
Well, there's lots of little things, and they're hard to see unless you have those conversations, those small conversations with people. For example, we did a four-week kind of run of Creative Stream. So we did podcasting, you know, very basic, kind of ask questions. They write down their answers, and then they speak into a microphone, and we edit it and listen back to it. After we finished that four-week session, one of the participants was talking to me, and he was talking about how before, when he would talk to his mother, he would use voice messages sometimes, but he really didn't like his voice. After we finished our podcasting, he said he was much more confident in his voice, and he sent a lot more voice messages. And I think that's, you know, that's a huge thing
that
right there.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And that, you know, for most of us, that, yeah, sending this thing is just normal. We'd send a voice message if you needed to, but we don't really give it too much of a second thought yet. That's probably changed his world and probably changed his mum's world too.
Oh,
that
her
son could leave messages.
Stuff that little could just, open up the world to them. And it makes it much more easier. It could be that. It could be learning how to catch the bus. So we had just another quick example. We had another participant who, he was a bit anxious about the bus, the idea of taking the bus. He did have a B card, which you use to get around Hamilton.
Okay.
And one of the other guys who was confident in taking the bus showed him how to take the bus, and he did it. And now he's doing it on his own. He's going to volunteering on the bus on his own.
Wow.
And just right there, I mean, that's a bit of bigger example than the voice messages. That, because that allows him to get around the whole city and do what he wants to do on his own time.
And I guess that comes down to it. It's not just about getting the bus in, is it? It's about having the choice where I can go and do stuff that I want on my terms.
Right.
I can live life on my own terms. I can choose. I can get around. I'm mobile. That is just wow.
It's the things we take for granted that make all the difference to them.
Definitely small. Definitely in the light of the show. Definitely small things, but probably some of the ones with the biggest impact we've seen.
Yeah,
you know, we say, you know, as a society, possibly as a people, we look for the big things, the things that are impressive, whether that's buildings or money or career success or whatever. And these things here are often overlooked. They're tiny, really. Someone can take the bus. Big deal. Society on the whole would say, but this is, for this person and his family, this is pretty huge, isn't it?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Because that also frees up family or support workers. As we've kind of designed Foundation, it stretches their capability with keeping support hours the same or even reducing them over time. So doing more with less.
Definitely more efficient as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you mentioned, you know, about before the program started, you mentioned about the barbecue. But seems to be someone kind of likes, you talked about teaching someone to use the barbecue and then they teaching someone else and then they teaching another person. How does that work? What happens? How do you facilitate that?
Well, it starts with an interest. So one of the participants will say, I'll probably be having a conversation. I think that's the way it went. I saw that his capability with the barbecue was getting more and more. And then he kind of started to plateau a bit. You know, you can only get so good at cooking sausages on the grill. So
See, that's an American thing right now, right? The grill. New Zealanders would call us on the barbie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there I reverted.
And I bet you come back and say, yeah, on the grill with all the fixings.
Yep, that's
a very American thing as well, right?
Getting back
to the barbecue.
It might have been you. It might have been me. Someone had a conversation where we were talking about the barbecue and, hey, you know, you kind of taken, you know, the lead here with this barbecue. Would you like to teach other people? And the answer was yes, you know. So that's kind of how it evolved. And then once currently we're kind of on the second person in terms of training them up. So once that second person gets confident, it can trickle back down and keep going.
So the old saying, teach a man to fish, right?
Right,
so
exactly.
Teach a man to use the barbecue and then I'll be kept in sausages for the rest while everyone works at the foundation.
Right.
Okay. And the other one you actually mentioned, this was actually quite interesting, but also what's going on? This, you mentioned that phrase brain mush, like,
yeah. What? So that came about. We were doing our employment stream, which we kind of learn employment skills and whatnot, which can be a bit of a heavier, more so like a bit more of an academic focus in a sense. It's just a bit of a heavier topic oftentimes. And one of the participants was trying to come up with, you know, what to say, and nothing was coming out. And he said, for a while there, he was just saying, just kind of shaking his head, saying, no, nothing. And then he came up with the word brain mush.
Brain mush. I like the sound of that. That's actually pretty cool. Pretty descriptive, really, isn't
it? Yeah, and you know exactly what that means, right? He named what was happening, you know. And we all have that happen where you're thinking and you're just trying to think and nothing comes out, blank mind.
Yeah.
Brain mush. So actually, after he said that, he came up with that word. I was very impressed. And, you know, after the session, I wrote that down. But during, we went outside to go throw around the Frisbee in the backyard. And in that moment, there were a few people who were struggling to come up with things. Just in those couple of minutes of throwing the Frisbee around, I got I know what to say. One of them said that. So we came back inside and we moved right along.
So it was like that Frisbee was just that, removing the environment, doing something physical instead of getting out of your head, doing something physical.
Could be the stress, getting rid of that stress of intimidating environment kind of. Yeah.
And that's probably where creativity lies as well too, you know, like diving deep into something and then giving yourself that physical release so you can, your brain can kind of make those other connections that are really hasn't in the start, isn't it?
Well, often creativity lies in the most unexpected places.
Yeah. Hey, that's really cool. And I hear you guys are doing something quite physical as well too. You know, you mentioned Parkrun. Now, for those of you who are listening, Parkrun runs every Saturday. Right across the world, there's thousands of Parkruns around. And it's a timed 5K that's free. You turn up, you go to their website, you print a barcode out, and you turn up, you run your 5K, and you get a time. And it stays on your website, and you keep track of your times over the thing. But you've got a few people who are doing it now, is that right?
Yes. I'm not entirely sure if they've started yet, but we have printed their barcodes, they've been signed up, and they are eager to go. Yeah,
because they you mentioned also that they were keen on volunteering for that as well too.
Because
I know in park runs they're always screaming out for volunteers for their, whether it's the timekeepers or people to collect the tokens.
Yeah.
Or even the Tallying Charlies. There's always spaces there, aren't there?
Yes.
That's really cool as well.
Yeah.
So when we look at all of those things, or why do these small things matter more than people think?
I think the small things matter more than people think because they're the difference between needing support and not. You know, if you don't know how to use public transport, for example, you're kind of stuck relying on other people, and that takes away from that independence, you know, kind of the foundation of foundation. You know, we want people to be independent, to live their lives the best way that they can on their own terms with their own skills that they learn. Right.
Okay, yeah. Because I know that, and that kind of leads me to my next question is that sometimes it's hard to notice these small things. I know my favorite time of the day is actually when our participants come in. I'll make myself a coffee. I'll come down and sit on the couches. We've got this little corner called conversational corner, and have a coffee with them. And it's interesting to hear what they have to say, whether it's things that they struggle with, things that they're really excited about. And it's really, I go away after even 10 minutes with them thinking, you know, we're not dissimilar ourselves. And so for you, do you have any kind of tips or insight of things that help you notice things?
Help me notice things. Really sitting, my typical time to do it is after the sessions, because then they kind of experience it, and then that's when they have the things on their mind.
Okay.
I have a perfect example. You know, I was sitting at the in reception room kind of with one of the participants after we did shopping and cooking, and she was telling me how she's always seen people do shopping, you know, use the self-checkouts and whatnot, scan their items and pay for them, but she's never done it herself.
Oh,
and
wow.
That was, that day was the first day that she had ever gotten the opportunity to actually do it herself.
That's incredible.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. So it's just kind of being aware of really what's happening and where people are.
Yeah.
There you go. So going back to your big move from the States, what is your biggest adjustment you've had to make?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's really not too dissimilar from the States, New Zealand. It's pretty Americanized, I have to say. My biggest adjustment, at least from where I lived in South Florida, would be all of the paddocks and all the farms and whatnot, and just the sheer amount of nature, untouched land kind of.
Okay. And what do you miss the most, though?
Oh, gosh. Taco Bell. Taco Bell here is not the same.
Oh, I hope not.
No, it's not good here. The food, I'd say. The food.
Yeah. Okay. And if you stayed there, what do you think you'd be doing now? So if there was no roadblocks, if there was no woman of my dreams, if there was no coming from a plane, not holding a sign at the airport, what would you be doing?
That is a fantastic question that I probably don't have an answer to, because I really couldn't see it any other way.
Quinn, you are an interesting guy. Thank you for being on The Small Things That Matter. And definitely those are a heap of small things. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Join me again for another conversation next week. And you can listen to any past episodes on your favorite podcasting platform. I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.